Braves pitching dominates the Phillies on Tuesday night, while the New York Yankees and Cleveland Guardians take 12 innings to figure out who's going to finally win. Let's recap all the action. This is First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Wednesday, August 21st. I am Lindsey Crosby with Athlon Sports. He's Christian Rau, managing editor of InsideTheCardinals.com. And Christian, great day of baseball yesterday. Great evening to baseball, really. Obviously most of the games in the nighttime. But I want to start with a game that was so big, we previewed it with an extra episode in Happy Hour yesterday. Braves over the Philadelphia Phillies. 3-1 Braves victory. Ronaldo Lopez coming back from the IL, out-duel Cy Young candidate Zach Wheeler. Wheeler allowed 2 runs in 6 innings, 7 strikeouts. Lopez allows 1 run in 5 innings with 10 strikeouts. And I think the big story here is just how ineffective Philly's lineup was against Atlanta. They're held to 5 total hits. 2 of those from Alec Boehm, actually. But the top 3 in the order, Kyle Schwarber, Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, 0-for-12 with 7 strikeouts. And our guy Troy, who was on here last week to talk Phillies, gave me the nugget that Ronaldo Lopez is the first pitcher in baseball history to strike out both Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner 3 times. Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper 3 times in the same game.
Wow.
I think my question coming out of that game is this. Is the National League East race actually closer than we thought it was? Because with the Austin Riley injury, we kind of assumed there's no way Atlanta's going to keep up and make a run for the East. Their goal now is just to fight to hold a playoff spot. Is there the possibility that, no, Philly just can't seem to put Atlanta away and this could be an actual race in the final month of the season?
I feel like you have to say that there is a race here because what you saw last night in the game. When we did our series preview, I predicted the Braves to win the series 2-1, but the game that I predicted them to lose was the Zach Wheeler game, and they wound up winning that game. And on the back of Reynaldo Lopez, what a return after coming back from the IL. We weren't expecting to have that such a great return because we saw that happen with Max Fried. He didn't have a great return. It was great for Lopez. Also like the fact that... go ahead.
Sorry. I do think the difference there was Ronaldo Lopez got a minor league rehab start and Max Fried did not. And The Braves learned from Fried's return and they made Lopez go do one before he came back.
That's a good point. And even with the season dwindling down and them being close to being out of a playoff spot, they still went ahead and did that, which... it's a bold move. It's a risk, but it looks like it's going to pay off. I also like the fact that they piggybacked Grant Holmes with Lopez. I thought Holmes was going to pitch a little longer, but I really liked that. Mm-hmm. I thought that was having those two together around the same time of the rotation, I think is going to be huge for the Braves. But when you look at how they went against Schwarber and Turner and Harper, that's huge, Lindsey. I think that we really do have a race on our hands for the NL. For the NL East, I think we really do. And now we're down to 6-game lead. Atlanta's done really good against Philadelphia this year.
Atlanta's got 6 games left against them too.
Yeah. We've saw this team overcome so many things this year, from all the way from when Sean Murphy got hurt the second game of the season to
opening day. The first game, they rescheduled the opener from opening day to the next day. So it was day of the season, but it was the first game. He left the 7th inning.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So from that point on all the way till the Austin Riley injury just a few days ago, they have overcome everything, even though that they are not the team that we expect them to be chasing for 100 wins. They're still in the playoff race and they're still in the NL East race. Not going to make any predictions today, not doing it, but you got to be excited for what, if you're a Braves fan, you got to be excited for what you saw last night.
Yeah. I mean, now granted, Philly fans are going to turn around and say, it doesn't matter until you get to the postseason. And we saw the last 2 years, Atlanta won over 100 games and then lost in the first round and their first matchup to Philly in the postseason. But I think this, to me, I don't know if this is Philly's not good away from home. I don't know if this is just Philly's feasted on bad pitching or what, but for some reason, this Phillies team doesn't do the same against Atlanta in the regular season. I mean, I'll remind folks, first two series, one in Citizens Bank Park to open the year and one in Atlanta, Braves won them both. And, you know, I believe the season series right now is 5-2 in Atlanta's favor. So Max Fried versus Aaron Nola is the matchup today. Philly did confirm Christopher Sanchez versus Spencer Schwellenbach on Thursday. Again, if you want more about this matchup, these pitching matchups for all three games, go to Tuesday afternoon's Happy Hour episode. We broke down this series, all three games, and the pitching matchups in there and what we thought was going to happen. So a lot more detail in there. You can go check that out. Going from Ronaldo Lopez coming back off the IL, Justin Verlander of the Houston Astros comes off the IL for a start on Wednesday. He had two rehab starts in AAA. I'm sorry, no, he had, they were AA Corpus Christi because AAA was on the road. So he made two rehab starts for AA Corpus Christi. He threw four innings in the last one last Thursday. So he's on extra rest for today's start. What do you think are reasonable expectations for Justin Verlander today?
I think you can get him through five. I think that you got to be happy with that. I think you just have to be satisfied with what you have. Now we are, this is the series that they're in right now with the Red Sox has been one of the most exciting series I've seen in quite some time. Like this series has been bananas. They had a walk-off win on Monday for the Astros, Yainer Diaz, as we mentioned on the show yesterday. And then last night, Boston wins the game to even up the series, but it was back and forth as well. They had, Tristan Casas for the Red Sox had his first home run to go to 3-0. Then John Singleton ties it up to go 3-3. It was a battle back and forth. Yainer Diaz did it again. Like there's just a lot of interesting things with this series. Bringing back Verlander is just that one extra little, call it the cherry on top, if you will. I think it's going to be a really exciting series. But I think five innings, if you can get five innings out of him, and or if you get a quality start, that'd be fantastic. But if you get five innings from him, not allow more than three runs the way that your offense has been performing, I think you call that a really good start and a good enough start probably to keep yourself in the game against this Red Sox squad.
Yeah, he threw 57 pitches in that last rehab outing. And so I'm guessing five is the goal, right? I don't expect him to go much longer than that. If he can be efficient and get through some innings quickly, I think you can get him through five, but you're probably not looking more than 65 or maybe 70 pitches. Because again, he only threw 57. I think part of the reason you got to call him up is you just started a stretch of 18 games without an off day. Joe Espada mentioned that they're going to use a 6-man rotation right now just to make it through those 18 games. I mean, you've got 2.5 weeks without a day off. And so I think that kind of makes it a little bit iffy as far as what can we expect from Verlander, right? Activating him and sticking him back in this without another rehab start is risky. I mean, let's be honest with it. It's risky, but even without Kyle Tucker, it feels like the offense is there to cover if something goes wrong. So I think it's going to work out. I think it's going to be, I expect them to do fine. They're like 11 games over 500. It's the best that they've been all year. They're obviously leading by 4 games over the Mariners. We've got more on the Mariners later. And so you have a little wiggle room here, right? Your offense is playing well enough. Your division lead is well enough where you can afford this. But it does feel like it's a little bit risky knowing that Verlander might not have the length. And if you have to burn a bullpen guy pretty hard, you don't really have a chance to, like, you have to play tomorrow and you got to keep going for 2 more weeks. So it's risky, but I think it'll work out because it's Justin Verlander. I mean, Father Time's going to catch up to him eventually. It's probably not now. So it's kind of hard to bet against Justin Verlander. Yeah. Talking about, go ahead.
No, I was just going to agree with you that you're right. You can't bet against Father Time. You can't do it. There's no way in chance that I'm going to do it. because I guess you should probably mention on the show, I'm an ODU alumni. He's an ODU legend. So I'm always going to root for my king. So there's no worries about that.
There you go. Talking about injured list, Zach Eflin of the Baltimore Orioles goes on the injured list. A reminder, they acquired him from the Tampa Bay Rays right before the trade deadline. Right shoulder inflammation is the diagnosis. It's retroactive back to Saturday. You can push these things back 3 days. So since they did it on Tuesday, they could push it back to Saturday. They believe he's not going to miss a ton of time. I believe Brandon Hyde said they expect him to be back by September. So we're looking at close to a minimum stint. He was the scheduled starter for today's series finale in New York against the Mets. So they had to scramble a little bit there. But no additional imaging, things like that. They literally just think it's inflammation. I think kind of, all right, so Grayson Rodriguez is still out. He has that lat strain. He's still out. Kyle Bradish, Tyler Wells, John Means, all out for the year with elbow surgery. They have five starting pitchers on the injured list, right? Felix Bautista, obviously out. He had Tommy John. They've lost two other high-leverage relievers, Danny Colum and Jacob Webb. And then they've lost a couple infielders. Jordan Westberg was an all-star. He's on the IL. Jorge Mateo is the fastest player on the team. He's on the IL. Does Baltimore have enough starting pitching to make a postseason run at this point? I don't know if you are going to get back Rodriguez, but like without Eflin, here's the rotation. You've got Corbin Burnes, Dean Kramer, Albert Suarez, Trevor Rogers, who didn't look great on Monday against the Mets, and prospect Cade Povich.
Yeah, tough. Thankfully, they went and got some pitching at the deadline. One of them was Eflin and, you know,
Rogers.
Rogers being that other one. But Rogers, as you mentioned, has not looked good. I'm pretty sure the last time I checked, he has been the worst starting pitcher that was traded based on ERA. Over seven since coming to Baltimore. He has an ERA of over seven. But you know what? The Baltimore Orioles have the best rotation in baseball. That is on the injured list. So honestly, it's just there's a lot of issues. And the Felix Bautista issue is also a big deal as well. I know we're not talking about the rotation too much, but Craig Kimbrell, obviously, has not been that fantastic. They went and got Sir Anthony Dominguez, who's now taking over that closer role. The first day that he takes over the closer role, he hops into a non-save situation. He lets up a walk-off home run to Alvarez. So there's a lot of things that Baltimore doesn't have going their way when it comes to pitching staff. Mm-hmm. However, Lindsay, we have seen it time in and time out all season long that these competitors find a way to win with all these injuries. So are they going to do it? It's possible, but this one looks bleak when you look at it. Yes, Corbin Burnes has been fantastic. Kramer's been a little up and down. You don't really know what you're going to get from Cade. And it's just, to me, this is going to be a tough one. They do have McDermott sitting in the minor leagues that they can bring up for a possible spot start. They do have a
Chase
couple
McDermott, pieces. Yeah.
Yeah, apologize. They do have a couple pieces sitting in the minor leagues that they could use for spot starts and to utilize. But it's just, when you look at this team, it's just tough. It's tough to say that they're going to be able to keep pushing forward. They have a good enough lead to be able to say they're going to be a playoff team. Yeah. But when you talk about the American League East, I mean, the Yankees also have their problems. But this seems like a really hard one to fill. This rotation seems like a really hard one to fill. For so many years, the Orioles have always been the question of this pitching is the problem. The team is fine. They just need more pitching. They go at it at the deadline, and a month after the deadline, they're back to that same question.
Yeah. I'll say I think they have enough to get through the regular season. Like you said, still hold a playoff spot. They may not hold off the Yankees for the East, but still have a playoff spot. But I think without Grayson Rodriguez, your playoff rotation is Corbin Burnes and a bunch of hope. And if you end up in that wildcard series and you have to burn Corbin Burnes in that wildcard series, you are really in trouble as far as you get to that next round. You're facing somebody's 1-2-3 and you're rolling out a 3-4-6 or something like that. I really think you could be in the Orioles could be in trouble. So at the same time, you alluded to it. The New York Yankees also have some trouble. They go 12 innings yesterday versus Cleveland. They allowed 6 runs in the 12th inning to lose that game. I think that might be a record under the Manfred Mann era of runs allowed in an extra inning game or in a single extra inning. I'm not sure. But interesting thing here, Clay Holmes. Okay, Clay Holmes has 10 blown saves this year. Yankees fans talk like he's the worst player in the league. He's allowed 16 earned runs in those 10 blown saves, which is not a ton for 10 blown saves. With the caveat of I have not gone to check and see how many of those were in extra innings. He did not throw in extras yesterday, I believe he threw in the ninth. Does New York have the bullpen, have the relievers to get through a deep postseason run?
Right now, I'm going to say no, that bullpen is an issue. And Clay Holmes being the forefront of that because of the blown saves. We mentioned it on the show a few days ago. He's the first Yankee since the late 80s to have as many blown saves as he's had. But I don't think it just stems from just Clay Holmes. You look at all the majority of the pieces that they've added since the trade deadline or from a waiver claim, and they have not been great. They picked up De Los Santos from the White Sox. They claimed him. They've already DFA'd him. They already brought him back. Or I'm sorry, the White Sox claimed him after they DFA'd him. But they made a trade for him and already DFA'd. The Yankees picked up a contract from former Blue Jays Tim Mesa. He's been awful. He was not good last night. He was one of the reasons that they let up so many pitches or so many runs in extra innings. And then Mike Leiter Jr. From the Cubs. Also not great. So just those alone, those are some of the pieces that you picked up at the trade deadline are not doing good for your bullpen. Then you go ahead and add Clay Holmes with just the way he's pitching. It's not good. And they also have their own rotation problems as well. Yeah, it's great having Garrett Cole back, but Luis Gill, as great as he was at the beginning of the season at the beginning of this season, Lindsay, he had 6 walks. He allowed 6 walks in 3 innings last night. So there is just there's a lot of question marks across the American League East when it comes to pitching, and Orioles have it worse when it comes to rotation. Yankees have it worse when it comes to bullpen. Which one is going to be more impactful coming down the stretch?
I feel like the Gill thing, it's definitely a workload issue, right? 2021, he throws 79 in the third innings in the minors, 29 in the third in the majors. So right at 100 innings. 2022, he gets 25 and 2/3 innings before getting hurt. All he gets in 2023 is 4 innings and 2 rehab starts in single-A Tampa with the Tarpons. And then he turns around. He's already at 121 and 2/3 innings. I think there is a possibility if you have the health in the rotation, maybe you move Gill to the bullpen so that rather than asking him to go 4 or 5 or 6 innings when he's probably physically exhausted, he can go out of the bullpen and throw 1, right? Throw 2. If you can use him twice a week, you know, maybe even 3 times a week. I feel like that's probably better for him than trying to go 5 or 6 innings every 5th day. Now, granted, that means giving more run to Will Warren, one of your top prospects who was having a rough year in the minors before he came up. That means you've got to get better results out. You can't skip Marcus Stroman anymore. You've got to get better results out of Nestor Cortes and Carlos Rodon, who have both in the mid-4s. But, like, there's an avenue there. You know, Clark Schmidt being on the 60-day IL doesn't help, right? Because now you have to go with Warren. You have to find spot starts. But it just feels like you can't count on Gill in the rotation every 5th day anymore. Another situation where maybe trading all of those pitchers you traded in some of these deals, like to get Juan Soto, to get, some of these other guys, maybe it wasn't the best idea in the world. We'll see.
Yeah, it might be the worst idea in the world, especially if they don't re-sign Juan Soto this offseason.
Exactly. Talking about prospects, though, here in quick pitch, Nick Kurtz of the Oakland A's gets moved from single A to double A Midland. His 7 games, he's been a week in single A, batted 400, 571, 960 was the slash line. 4 homers, 12 RBIs, 10 walks to 7 strikeouts. Scouting director Eric Kubota compared him to Matt Olson when they drafted him, talking about his power, his advanced approach, and his really good first base defense. And they cited that exact same comparison when they talked about moving him to Double A. Is there, like, with some of the existing first basemen over here for Oakland not being available, is there any chance they try to get him up this year and use him in the last week or two of the season?
No, man, I hope not. I hope not. I'm one of those guys that don't want to see, especially on non-competitive teams, don't want to see them push prospects. I think that you set him up perfectly for spring training. But is there a chance? I mean, there's who knows what Oakland's doing, so there's a possibility. I think Nick Kurtz could easily be, and I think also MLB.com, or it was Bleacher Report, excuse me. It was Bleacher Report. They also went out and said, who do you think is going to be the face of the franchise? And I think they said 2027, and they used Nick Kurtz. And I'd agree with that. I think he could easily be the guy that's going to be like the one you think of when you think of the Oakland A's moving forward. He was so fun to watch with Wake Forest. That Wake Forest team was so fun to watch in college last year. And then you get a chance to see him in the minors doing some really patient things already, which is cool. I really like seeing that low strikeout ratio, already getting good walks. That's something that you really want to see. And he's able to show some power as a corner infielder. I would love to see him be in the mix, the hard mix, to start in 2025 for the Athletics, because by then they will no longer be Oakland. But I really don't want to see him come up this year, Lindsay. I want to see them just take their time. Like, we're talking about him just moving to Double A.
Yeah. That's kind of where I am too. It's like, I don't think we have the need to bring a guy up and to do all of that to get him all the way up. But I think it'll be interesting to see what happens between him and Tyler Soderstrom going forward. Soderstrom was a catcher that's playing more first base than catcher now. He's on the IL right now, but even then, batting 219 with an OPS of like seven, like low sevens, something where you feel like they probably think they can upgrade a little bit. I'll be curious to see a healthy Soderstrom, what he can do, and then how he handles the competition with Nick Kurtz, probably in spring training.
That's a good point, because he's younger for being a college bat too, because he's only 21, and that's young in comparison to most bats coming out from college.
Exactly. All right. Talking about, we had some reliever performances. Ben Joyce, trying to close out Angels and Royals, hits 105 twice in an at bat versus Bobby Witt Jr. in the ninth inning. The third pitch was only 103. Here's my quick question for you. Would you rather choose not to face Ben Joyce or Aroldis Chapman?
Are we talking like 2024, both of them, or are we talking like both in the
right
front?
Now, you leave your computer and you walk out there and they're there for an at-bat. Who would you rather not face?
I mean, I'm striking out either way. I'm probably hiding like the guy from Benchwarmers. That's probably what I'm doing. But I have to say Ben Joyce. I'd have to say I would rather not face Ben Joyce right now because of how good his stuff is. His sinker's break is insane as well. His slider's getting better. He's starting to see a lot more control. Walk rate's going down a lot. I think it went from 18% last year to about just under 11%. So you got to love that improvement. His arm slot's looking a lot better as well. So I'm really excited to see what Ben Joyce can do moving forward. Because last year, you know, coming up from Tennessee, University of Tennessee, just being, you know, a lot of people talked a lot of hype from him. The volunteer fireman. A lot of people talked the hype of how exciting it was to have him up. He didn't really show up that well because there was a lot of control issues. He's starting to figure those out in the second year. I'm excited to see what the future holds for Ben Joyce.
Fun fact is, until late last year, Ben Joyce had never thrown in back-to-back outings. College, professionals, nothing. Like, when he was drafted, I thought he was a little overdrafted as far as draft slot. It's the Angels, and, you know, they're not well-regarded with draft strategy. It was something where control was an issue. Being able to go back to back was an issue, and then adding that sinker, he's made a lot of changes, positive changes that have been good. And it's, I think I'm in the same place you are. I'd rather face Aroldis Chapman than Ben Joyce, simply because I think Joyce can probably take the velo crown from Chapman, but Joyce is going to be a more uncomfortable at bat with the not only the four seam, but the sinker as well. So same boat you are. Kind of moving on real quick because we're just a few minutes away from the end of the show. The Dodgers rolled the Mariners last night. Max Muncy homered again. Jason Hayward pinch hit 3-run home run. Here was the big thing that stood out to me. Not great pitching performances on both sides. Seattle only gets 4 innings out of their starter, which is kind of wild for Seattle. But Walker Buehler of the Dodgers, 3 runs on 7 hits in just 4 innings. 3 walks, only 1 strikeout. I believe he is a pending free agent. Obviously, he's coming back from major elbow surgery. So this has kind of been a restore your stuff. But dude just turned 30. Is there any chance anybody gives him more than a 1-year deal in free agency this year?
I think if you have a desperate team going at it, maybe, but he screams a prove it deal. He really does scream, okay, let's give this guy a prove it deal, try to see if he's still got his stuff. And then he goes mm-hmm. out and gets his contract in the offseason of 2025. So I don't see him being a Dodger next year. I think they're going to go ahead and probably make some moves for other players. Max right. Fried comes to mind, unfortunately, but yeah. Walker Buehler, I do see him going to get a prove it deal somewhere else. And I think that might be the best thing for him because yeah, coming off from injury, he hasn't been the best this season since he's returned as well. I think he's already at a smaller sample size.
It's a 6.02 ERA and 9 yeah. starts.
Over 6, and 9 starts isn't the smallest sample size. I mean, that's enough to be able to look at that ERA and be like, okay, there's some issues here. So I think we're at the point right now that if he doesn't figure it out in the next couple starts, that we're probably talking about him not being on the playoff roster either.
I kind of agree with you. I don't think he'll be on the playoff roster. 40 and a third innings, lowest strikeout rate of his career, 7.6 per 9, highest walk rate of his career, 3.1 per 9, and his whip is 1.587. Just absurdly bad numbers for him. A terrible platform year, and obviously he's going to end up having to take that 1-year deal. And then if that team's smart, they have a club option on it, or they just sign him to an extension if he ends up truly being back. Talking about teams kind of being a little bit sloppy, the New York Mets have a dreadful defensive game against the Baltimore Orioles in their loss. I heard it characterized by a beat writer as, quote, little league defense. Here's the thing. They just scored 4 runs in the 8th inning to cut the Orioles' lead from 6-2, right? They're at home, too. 2 on in the 9th. Gunnar Henderson hits a ball to shallow left. Brandon Nimmo, who missed the weekend with a shoulder issue, dives, misses it. It rolls all the way to the sidewall. Cedric Mullins scores from second. Nimmo throws home. It gets past Francisco Alvarez. Ryan Mountcastle advances to third. The pitcher's backing it up. Danny Young, he gets it. He throws it back into left field. So Mountcastle scores. Henderson goes to second. Nimmo throws home again, and Henderson advances to third. Like, one, the rule here is just stop throwing the ball. Just stop the play, right? Hold the ball. But given the Mets doing Mets things like this, do they have what it takes to stay in the wild card race? Or is this just kind of emblematic of how their season's destined to finish?
Yeah, I mean, if you would have asked this question 2 days ago after the walk-off and the clutch walk-off they had to start this series, you would say, okay, this Mets team looks good. They're in an inflection point. This could be the opportunity of them to turn their season around and find themselves in a wild card spot. Then they go and turn around and do this. The Orioles admin trolled them after this play. They called them the New York Mess, by the way. And I think that's perfect. So not only do you get the little league style, you get the New York Mess. But yeah, this play
that wasn't the only trolling the Orioles did. There was a play earlier in the game. Francisco Alvarez, the catcher, was trying to field a swinging bunt and flip it to first base. And nobody covered home plate. And so Colton Cowser scored from second on an infield bunt that I don't even think they got the out at first either. And so the tweet from the Orioles was the lights are on, but nobody's home. And it's just the New York Mets are Metsing, man.
Yeah, if you're going to want to be a playoff team, you can't do that, no matter what the inning is. I know it was the 9th inning. They were trying to do wild things, try and stay in the game, but you just can't do that.
Yeah. Final note here before we go. Javi Baez makes his return to Wrigley Field. Obviously, remember the Detroit Tigers was traded away and then signed a long-term deal with Detroit. Got a standing ovation. promptly went, he struck out, ended up going 0-for-4 with four strikeouts. The Javi Baez experiment.
Once a Cub, always a Cub.
Once a Cub, always a Cub. this has been First Pitch. We, if you're listening on audio, do us a favor, subscribe to the show, leave us a 5-star review, means a ton. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, leave us a comment, hit the notification bell so that you know when we drop new episodes. We're going to have a bonus episode today. We're going to talk about the MVP races. I think it's pretty much down to a 2-man race in both leagues, but we'll break that down this afternoon. Until then, this has been First Pitch.